Hello, listeners, and welcome to the Poetry Salon Cast. I'm your host, Tricia Faye Hefner.
And I'm Callie Grace Thomas.
On each episode, we interview one of our favorite poets to ask what got them started writing.
And what keeps them going.
And my favorite question, what do they do with a rough draft that wants to play rough?
Then we ask for advice that we and you, our listeners, can use in our own writing practices.
Without further ado, welcome to this week's episode of the Poetry Salon Cast. All right. Hello, listeners, and welcome to the Poetry Salon Cast. We are here today with the poet Gustavo Hernandez. Gustavo is the author of Flower Grand First from Moontide Press 2021, and he's the author of Form His Arms from Ghost City Press 2020. He was born in Jalisco, Mexico, and lives in Southern California. Gustavo, welcome to the podcast, and please start us off with two of your poems.
This poem is called Carmen. The four walls of the Setco Plastics factory were built around my sister's name, its red lip, its pride, its dark hair pulled up to where she couldn't see it. Her words were sifted through a wall of exhaust fans, lost as a second shift pushed the city to the edges of a new cycle. The light again drained from flower, from grand, from first. On most nights, she and I met in the artificial glow of our television, belts of stars soaked into the gold leg scrolls of telenovela chairs. I was kept awake by chaining meaning to other manufactured sounds, fat syllables of my name maneuvering through the blades of lean foreign words. There was one night in July where a mute girl in the novela willed the words back to her mouth to tell Arturo Peniche that his fiance had been a terrible villain. I told you she'd get her voice back. Carmen's tone was tempered flat through repetition, bottles and bottles and plastic cereal containers evenly spaced on a conveyor belt. She motioned for me to join her at the open front door. From the street, she was fading red lipstick. I was in electric blue garage sale t-shirt. The moon played with the overgrown ficus. June bugs spun around a porch light, but we looked past them and dreamt a far-off language. The next poem is called The Hereafter. The hereafter is, like everything around me, built by my father. His feet in wood frames full of mud and straw, comically slowed down by that strange small dog who ran ahead to be his companion. Of course, there are bean sprouts growing below the corn stalks, fields of wild tuberose and the boulder ledges of our river, the night filled with oil lamp bright, noon songs incomplete without some light radio static. It will always be Jalisco. I will just go out and say it. Say that the eyes of those who are mine adjust not to an ascent as much as a return. After all of our years, we finally set out toward the right horizon.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Gus.
Thank you so much for sharing those. You know, I'd love to ask a little bit about how you got started as a writer and what first called to you. When did you first know that you wanted to be a poet?
I've been writing in one way or another my whole life. Even as a child, I was always drawn to stories and poems. That was what made me excited. I mean, even in grade school, I had no interest in math. I had very little interest in science. I liked history and I liked what they called language arts portion of the day. Those were my favorites. I couldn't wait until we cracked open that little literature book. So I've always had that interest. As far as writing poetry, like the poetry that I am writing now, I started thinking about writing when I went back to school in 2014. I'd been away from any sort of like formal schooling for a long time. And I played music in my 20s, and that was kind of my creative outlet. Once I stopped playing music, I felt like I was still searching for something to get what I needed to say out. I tried painting for a little bit and that was a disaster. You know, I had no idea what I was doing. It was kind of fun at the beginning, but then it just started getting frustrating. So I decided I'd go back to school And I took a creative writing class the first semester I went back. It was a short story class. And I thought, you know, this is what I need to be doing. This is something that has always called to me. This is, I think, what I'm strongest in. I'm going to write fiction. So I took that class. I started writing short stories. And then eventually I took another course that was a mixture of fiction, nonfiction, playwriting, and poetry. At that point, I hadn't even thought of writing poems. You know, I didn't think I wanted to do that. I wrote my first poem for that class. When I was writing it, I felt something. It was kind of this like magic, right? Like, whoa, what just happened? It was a poem that came very fast. And when I read it in class, my professor thought it was good. And he said, you should try to get this published. That was the beginning.
That's fantastic. I'm curious, can you say a little bit about what that poem was, the first one?
Yeah, I don't even remember the name of it. And it was actually published. It was the first poem I ever published. I can't remember what it's called anymore, but it was an identity poem. I remember it was about being Mexican, but also being Americanized. Oh my gosh, it had some, I think that the last image in it was like me weightlifting. I don't know. It was a weird poem, I guess. It was kind of like the blueprint a little bit for what was to come, that exploration of my Mexican identity and the American identity.
I love that story. And I love that there were so many different genres that you got to like buffet samples. Essays, screenplays, novels, short stories. I'm wondering what it is about poetry that has called you in and kept you in its grasp as opposed to other genres.
A lot of it was the immediacy of having a finished piece of literature, right? I am somebody who doesn't have a great amount of patience for writing or a lot of other things, actually. So I think the immediacy of it, the fact that I sat down to write a poem, and at the end of that night, I had a poem. I had something that I could present, you know, in class, something that I could try to get published. And so I think that that's what really draws me to poetry is just, one, the immediacy, and two, how much you can say in such a small space.
Gustavo, one of the things that I noticed in reading your book, almost all of your poems fit onto a single page, which is something Kelly can tell you about this, but I tend to be a rambler in my poems. And I think that's something both of you guys do, just compacting so much meaning and imagery and great language all into a smaller package.
I think that for me, writing feels sort of like a tightrope act. I'm always afraid to fall. I sometimes wonder, do I exit out of a poem too soon? And that's always a concern of mine, but at the end of the day, I don't think I do. Like when I look at my poems now, sure, they probably could have been longer, but did I get across what I needed to get across? I think most of the times, to my satisfaction, I do. Opinions differ, of course. I think for me, I'm just so afraid of hitting a sour note. It's like when you're learning to ride a skateboard, right? And sometimes you're like, okay, no, I'm going too fast. I'm going to jump off. That's what writing poetry sort of feels like to me. People have told me, hey, you know, what do you think of writing like a long poem? And I'm like, I think it's fantastic for other people, but I don't know if I really want to go there. And I still feel the same way, even after, you know, writing for years and getting this book out. I just don't know if a long poem is something that I want to try.
I love that metaphor. We've had a lot of different poets on this podcast make metaphors for what poetry is like, but I think you're the first one to compare it to skateboarding. Having never been skateboarding, partially because I would be afraid of falling off, that metaphor really resonates. You get some momentum going, and before you can do some kind of damage or lose the momentum, really just jump off while it's still good. Leave the party before everything starts turning sour and the cops arrive.
Yeah, those are all good metaphors. Like, leave on a high note. There was an episode of Seinfeld, I think, where I think it was George. He wanted to leave the party on the high note. And so whenever someone would laugh at one of his jokes, he'd just disappear.
That's awesome. Well, it's also like, that's a rule in screenwriting, right? That you get in late and leave early. I love your analogy of skateboarding, because as someone who has skateboarded, I think about where to distribute the weight, and thinking about in a poem, if the beginning is all action, you're going to nosedive, or you kind of put the heaviness at the end and it feels like there's nothing in the beginning. Everything slows the momentum if it's not the right distribution. I'm the same way with long poems. It's so funny. To me, it feels like a dare. Like, how tight can I get it? How can I spend the least amount by getting like the maximum impact?
I think that's a really good segue into talking about your writing process a little bit more generally, and about the book in specific. Can you tell us a little bit about this first book of yours and how it came together, how it came into being?
Sure. When I started writing poems, I knew that I wanted to have a book. It wasn't one of those things where I was just writing to write, which is all well and good. Sometimes people write for themselves, and that's the journey and the reward. But for me, I come from a background of playing live music. So when I was in my 20s, I had this little musical project, and I'd go and play gigs, and I would record my own CDs at home and distribute them. And that was one of my favorite things. I think immediately when I started writing poetry, I knew that I was working toward that. I wanted my poems to be out in the world. I didn't know what that book would look like. So there was that period at the beginning where you are kind of just writing and seeing what happens. But the book started to take on a very clear narrative arc.
Can you say more about that? Right now, I'm fascinated with arcs. I've been reading all kinds of things about the narrative arc, and I would love to hear your take on it and how it relates to your book.
I come from a background of short fiction. That is the one thing that I absolutely love to read. I read poetry, of course, and I love it, and I like novels, but I've always been a fan of short fiction. I think that when I think of any sort of literature, there is always the strong urge for me to have an arc. So I think that coming from that background, it wasn't intentional to where I said, okay, I want to write a book that has three parts and that's going to take me from childhood to adulthood. But it just started shaping up that way. It's like the book kind of told me like what we were doing. I think that's in the subconscious. I think I'm just so used to reading fiction that of course there was going to have to be a narrative arc. The closer I got to finishing it, the closer I realized that I was writing a coming of age book. And yeah. I thought, where did that come from? Because at that time, when I started writing, I was reading a lot, you know, I was reading Alice Munro, and I was reading Amy Hempel and Anne Beattie, you know, all great short story writers. And I hadn't read Lives of Girls and Women by Alice Munro yet, which is a coming of age book. A lot of the stuff was very much adult stuff. Stories of adulthood.
Yeah, I can tell that from the book. First of all, I have to say, having lived in Los Angeles for such a long time, seeing it through your eyes, though, it was so familiar and yet so strange. And it was really interesting to see it from the point of view of a young person raised in that world and discovering it, but with the backdrop of Mexico always haunting. I was really paying close attention, I think, to the first poem and the last poem and how well they give a bookend to the collection, because the first one starts out with this introduction to California. And if I remember correctly, the last line is something like, "The thing I love most about this place is that my father brought me here." And then the last poem is the afterlife. Like so many things, it's something my father built. So you've got the father really bookending the location at the beginning and the end of the book. It's really beautiful and well-ordered.
Thank you. Yeah, I struggled a lot with the order of the poems. It was something that I was working with up until probably about the last, I don't know, maybe like a year before it was published. Because originally I did want it to be divided into three parts. But at certain points of the writing process, it didn't make sense to me. And I would mix up the poems and say, okay, well, maybe the reader's going to build their own arc. What happened was I gave the manuscript to Colin Kelly, who is an amazing poet. And he looked at it and he said, this should be divided into sections. And that is what made me settle on that, because it had been in sections and it wasn't. But when he said, this should be in sections and here is what maybe the outline should be, that's when I made the decision, okay, it's staying in sections and we're going to go with that.
I loved so much of the coming of age aspect to it, especially in the way both how people and places raise you. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about sharing not only the poetic responsibility of writing about family, but also about writing about place and what you wanted to show the reader about each of these worlds.
I think that, Tricia, when you use the word haunted, it's perfect to use that, because California raised me physically. And so I grew up here, but Jalisco has always been with me in one way or another. I always tell people that being in my parents' house, it was maybe like a tear in these dimensions, where my siblings and I would be talking about our day and the people that we have here, our friends. And then you would always get the old stories. You would get Jalisco coming back through my parents keeping in touch with people from there. I haven't been back to Mexico, to Jalisco, since 1997. And it wasn't something that I said, okay, I don't want to go back. I got so caught up with life here and working and my relationships. And when I started writing this book, I thought, should I go back? Mm-hmm. And I thought, no, I don't think that this is what I need. I think that I do need to write this book having my feet here in California, but also having this whole other state, this whole other country informing what I am writing. Places change. So I know that the Jalisco that is there now is not the Jalisco that I left. And I also wanted to do that Jalisco justice. And I knew that the only way to do that was to use my parents, almost their vision, because a lot of what is Jalisco in this book, it comes from my parents. It comes from their stories. It comes from the images that they've given to me.
Yeah, there's a quote from an author, I think it may have been D.H. Lawrence, who said something like, he writes about New York most clearly when he's in Europe, being away from home and then trying to reconjure the place you're thinking of, the place that you've left, because you're forced to have your imaginative concept of something, which can be, I think, emotionally more true than the things that you might notice if you were actually there on the ground.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And there's so much of that going on with this collection.
The Poetry Salon is on a mission to provide inspiration, education, and support to poets everywhere at a price that is truly affordable for all.
Together, we are building a thriving community where poets can learn, grow, and share their work.
Whether you are a beginning poet or already a published author, you can get prompts, rewrite strategies, and a warm, supportive place where you can share your writing with other poets online.
Visit thepoetrysalon.com to find out more and register today.
Talk a little bit about those two poems that you read at the beginning. We would love to know a little bit about your creative process in general and how poems come to you. Which of those two came more easily?
The Hereafter came way more easily than Carmen. Carmen was the first poem that I wrote that ended up being in the collection. I wrote it as a sort of flash fiction story before I even went back to school. It's existed for a very long time. It was out of my consciousness for a long time, where I knew I'd written something about this childhood memory that I treasured. When I started writing poetry, I went back to it and I turned it into somewhat of a prose poem. Again, it just didn't feel like it worked. I reworked that poem for years, where I would go back to it and I'd say, okay, let me try this again. Let me figure this out. And it didn't feel like it came up to where the other poems were. Not that the images were not good, but it was just something that was resistant. There was something that wasn't there and I knew needed to be there. So the last time that I went back to it, when I finished it, that's when I wrote the line, "The light again drained from flower, from grand, from first." And that ended up being where the title of the book comes from. I remember telling one of my friends, "Hey, I had this poem and I just finished it today." And sometimes I think of my poems as people, and I don't know how much of that is me and how much of that is Tori Amos calling her songs the girls. So I think maybe I just stole it from her. I don't know. But I told my friend, I was like, "Hey, so I had this poem and, you know, she wasn't ready, but I wrote this line." And I was like, "Okay, girl, you've got your earrings on. Let's go out." That was when I knew that line. I was like, that's what it needed. And the Hereafter was...
Boy, hold on, because I want to delve a little deeper into that. First of all, I just want to say I love these metaphors. I love the personification of the poems. This one's got earrings on and she needed earrings before she go out the house. Like, that's a great way to specifically personify the poem. I'm wondering if you could say a little bit about what you remember starting the poem, as in, were you in a workshop? Did you have a memory come to you? Is it so far back that you can't even remember at this point?
Actually, it did come from just having a memory. There was one night when I was a kid and my sister worked the second shift at a plastics factory, and I was struggling with insomnia, I think from anxiety. When I was in grade school, the whole house, you know, my parents would go to sleep, my siblings would go to sleep, and I couldn't sleep. So I'd stay up and watch television, and then she'd get home around like 11, and we kind of talk about our day. And so those nights just stuck with me. So it was something that had been rattling around in my head for my entire life. And I knew that I needed to write about it, that I needed to come out somewhere. So when I started throwing around the idea of writing, that is the first thing I went to, because it just seemed like it was ready, but surprise, it was not quite ready to be put into its final form.
I love that idea of the poem speaking to you and saying, "All right, the earrings are on. It's time to go out." It makes me think of like the nights that I'm like, "Oh, I'm so tired, but I've already put on my makeup. So I guess
there's nothing left to do but drag my body to whatever venue is going to be happening in my 20s. But I'm wondering about, if you could talk a little bit about how you think a poem guides you and how you guide the poem. Because I know, especially for me, sometimes it's like a stare down. It's like, you're supposed to do this. And the poem's like, not today. And I love the way that you've talked about how things have been shaped. So I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about that, in that the poems are speaking to you, absolutely saying like, I'm ready, let's go, time to dance. But also, this is what I would like to say. Let me take the wheel.
I think that the thing that I find easiest about writing poetry is editing. But the difficult part about writing is actually having something to say, knowing what it is that I want to say. And most of the time, I don't know what I really want to say when I start writing a poem. Poems like Carmen are rare, where I actually have this memory and it's gonna... I think that for me, the easiest part of writing is the editing. Once I have something to edit, then I'm good. Like, I can feel like I'm pretty good at manipulating lines and seeing what works. But I think that the hard part for my writing process is actually having anything to work with, because the poems that you see, and you know, they're short, like we've talked about earlier, it's not like I have 15 other lines that I cut and didn't include in the poem. What you see is most of the time, almost everything that was written. I mean, sure, I cut out, you know, a line or two here and there, but there isn't much left, because that's just what my process is. I think that I don't do a lot of free writing. I probably should, and it might make things easier, but I don't know, the way I write is very blank page. I'm like staring at a blank page for an hour and a half, and then finally I get one line and I think, okay, well, where can I go from here? And then sometimes it doesn't go anywhere for another hour, and sometimes that one line will prompt me to write another and then another. Most of the time it's just waiting to have something to say, and then once that's there, it gets a lot easier.
I love that. I think it was Ocean Vuong. Yeah, I was listening to an interview and he was saying so much of being a poet is just sitting and observing and listening. I'm sure that you learned so much. I just had a first book come out and I learned a lot through the process. I'm wondering about the first book. It's a two-parter. I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the title.
So like I said earlier, the title comes from the poem Carmen. And flower, grand, and first are streets in the town where I grew up, in Santa Ana. And there are three of our bigger streets. Those streets just came to me because when I was writing about my sister, she worked at a factory on flower. And then grand is close by, and first street runs through flower and grand. And that is the first street I remember when we moved to the United States. And I always associate that street with my dad. I think that at first they were just street names. And then the more the book came together, they also are the sections of the book, right? The first section deals with me being a child. So, you know, flowering, growing, and then grand being the second section, to me speaks about that feeling when, I mean, the second section is about me in my 20s, discovering who I am sexually, discovering who I am as a gay man. But there's also youth and young adulthood, you know, being in my 20s, and you feel bigger than you are sometimes. And you'll see in the second section of the book, there's a lot of poems where I think that self-aggrandizing does more harm than good, right? To me and to others. And then first, First Street always reminds me of my dad. The idea of my dad being the first person to come to this country, him being here before me, obviously. Again, it wasn't some master plan that I had at the beginning. It just sort of happened, and I'm so thankful it did.
That is just amazing. I've been so intrigued by the title.
Thank you. And also, there's so much of Santana, the city, and these streets are so big, and they mean so much to so many of Santana's residents that it's almost like a little nod to them too, because a lot of people who have come across my book who are from Santana immediately get it. Flower Grand and First. But then again, there are Flower Grand and First in almost every city, right? They're very common street names. So There's that universal aspect of it that I like also.
I love that. And I love the way that it goes through the reflection process, the coming into one's own identity, just as kind of we explore the way a city is laid out and it changes. I'm wondering, in terms of what has your first book taught you about yourself as a poet, and what has poetry taught you about yourself as a person?
I think that the book as a poet has taught me who I am as a poet, because coming into poetry, I wasn't very well versed in poetry. I didn't read a lot of poetry. It has been a process. Like what you see in this book, that's me becoming a poet. It may not be as clear to the reader, but when I look at these poems, I can see my writing style taking shape. I can see the poems that gave me a little bit more direction into the way I write. And as a person, it has changed me. I think that I always tell people I could write another book about writing this book. It has been such an important tool in dealing with a lot of things that I had not dealt with the way I needed to. Like immigration, how much that has informed who I am and why I'm always so aware of the space that my body is inhabiting. Why am I so hyper aware of landscape and of where I am? It also, this book helped me to come to terms with the death of my father. I feel so fortunate to be able to write in that context, because I don't know what my grieving process would have been like without this book. I suspect that it would have been much, much harder if I had not been able to write and to pay tribute the way I was able to do with this book.
Beautiful. You know, I heard someone in a reading once say, like, poetry is not therapy, therapy is therapy. And I was like, yeah, but poetry certainly helps. You know, it certainly guides me, at least, through a lot of tough waters that I needed to navigate.
I mean, I agree that, of course, therapy is therapy. Yes, it is. But that doesn't mean that it's the only way that we can heal.
Well put. Very well put.
I think now would be an appropriate time to ask about the poem that came easier, and also the final poem of the book, The Hereafter. And if you can tell us a little bit about the genesis of that poem, and also why you felt like you wanted that to be the final poem.
Sure. The Hereafter was originally one line. I wrote it because, so I was putting together a little micro chat book, and the last day to submit was the last day I submitted the micro chat book. Ghost City Press does this micro chat book series in the summer every year. And so I thought, let me write a short little poem. Let's just see what comes out. And I wrote, "The Hereafter is like everything around me built by my father." And that was it. And I thought, you know what? That carries some weight to it. So when the micro chat got accepted, they give you a chance to finish up poems or add a poem. And I thought, I have more to say about this. This poem came pretty quickly. I put myself in a space that was, I don't know, just not as concrete as a lot of the spaces that are in these other poems. I just sort of thought, what does the hereafter look like? The fluidity, there's no real timeline. All of these things inform it. What does it look like? The poem just sort of came out. One of the things that I like about this poem is that my sister's dog passed away in 2020 in January. So when I wrote this poem, he just sort of showed up while I was writing it. I didn't set out to include him in the poem, but he just came into the room, and my dad loved that dog. I cried so hard when I wrote that line because it was just, you're all here. You're all here with me as I'm writing this. Once I wrote it, there was no question that that would be the last poem in this book, because it is an ending, but it isn't. Like I say in the poem, it's a return.
That is such a beautiful sentiment. And I have to tell you, and I think I've told you this, that line is why I invited you to come be on the Poetry Salon cast. I think we were in a reading, an online reading, and I heard that one line, the hereafter, like everything else, it's something my father built. And immediately I was like, oh, this is a book of poems I have to read now. My dad builds a lot of things and is built some of the houses or add-ons to the houses we've lived in, and is also very spiritual seeker. So for me, it really connected in that way. Of course, the hereafter would be something our parents would build for us. It's where the literal becomes metaphorical or works so well as a metaphor. And of course, you know, you have a different association with that, but it's so universal at the same time.
Yeah, thank you. I think that that's one of the things that I sometimes worried about when I was writing this book, is it's so personal and there's so much detail about my life and my family. Is it going to translate? You know, are other people going to get something out of it? And so hearing you say that you connected with that poem and the way that you connected it to your own life makes me really happy. And the response to that poem specifically has been really amazing. I think a lot of people connected with it.
Yeah. I know we're getting close to time, but I do want to ask just one more question, because we've talked about responsibility of writing about family and about place. So I'm wondering, how did your family respond to this book coming out? It seems like you're showing everyone in a nice light. It doesn't seem like you're revealing any deep, dark secrets other people might tell you not to talk about. But I'm just wondering, how comfortable are they with you making them the centerpiece of this book?
I had someone tell me a couple of weeks ago, like, that people should, you know, you should be careful about writing other people into your work. And so it brought up, I think that you definitely do have to be careful about including family members. And we all, you know, a lot of us know this, like, you have to write responsibly. But my family knows that they're going to end up in my poems. The response to the book has been, it's exactly what I think any writer would want. Like, my family loves the book. They love the fact that I have documented, I don't know, just given these stories a place, like made them something that someone can pick up and read. When you lose people, you lose so much. You lose so many of those stories if they are not written down or passed on in some way or another. And so, yeah, they love it. My sister Carmen, I think, she's in this book a lot. And for her birthday, I made her little broadside with the poem with Carmen on it. And she cried, and it's been lovely. I feel like I'm just very lucky and honored that they allow me to put them in my work.
Yeah, I think the idea that you can't write about family, God, I think most of us would have to give up our careers right now.
Exactly. when my dad was still around, and you know, you have disagreements with your family, of course, just like everyone. But whenever I was upset at my parents, it felt like my writing career was over. If I'm angry, I didn't want to write about them. And, you know, it's not like I was angry at them for long stretches of time, but just if I had a disagreement with them one day, then that night I knew that I was not going to be able to write a thing. I mean, I need my family to be there.
That's a wonderful take on writing. And it's very funny because I was just thinking the opposite. Like, well, if I don't have tension with someone, I can't find my way into a poem about them to save my life. My husband and I have been married. We've been together almost 10 years now, and I still can't write about him. So I'm just like, well, rather just go into the next room and talk to him instead. Whereas people that, you know, unrequited love and stuff, I'm like, I can write about that any old time. But hearing you say that and thinking over the book, yeah, they are all poems that I think have great warmth to them. And that's what I want to say. I think that's kind of how I want to summarize the book. This is a poem that has great warmth and affection for family and also great use of language. It's a really beautiful, beautiful collection. Anyone who wants to know what it's like to live in LA, and it'll give you a ground view and of Santa Ana specifically, and anyone who's spent time on Flower, Grand, and First will certainly recognize it immediately. Kelly, do you want to ask anything else or say anything else?
No, I just want to say thank you and how much I've just really enjoyed this conversation, not only on like craft, but just how experience is so rich and that it informs us. And I just love how open you seem to be to all poetic possibilities. So I just want to say thank you for encouraging that freedom and for the conversation and your reflection. It's been lovely.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Again, readers, I want to invite everyone to go out and get Flower, Grand, First from Moontide Press 2021. And you can also get Gustavo's chapbook, Form His Arms, from Ghost City Press 2020. Gustavo, again, thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing poetry and reflections on poetry with us. We look forward to seeing you again in the not so distant future.
Thank you so much. This was wonderful. Thanks.
Hey, Saloncast listeners. Do you have questions you want us to ask our guests about the writing or rewriting process? Have you tried some of these rewriting strategies yourself? What new revelations did they bring?
Message us at Tricia@thepoetrysalon.com or Kelly@thepoetrysalon.com with the subject line Saloncast Listener.
Also, do you want to do a random act of kindness? How about a senseless act of beauty? Rate and review us and write a comment on this episode.
It truly helps us get heard and get seen, and it helps other poets find us in the chaotic distractions of cyberspace.
It takes less than a minute and it's totally free.
Thanks again for being part of our community.
And remember to write on, share on.
And remember, whoever writes the worst draft wins.
Yay!